Come be a part of Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics with your host, Dr. Ed Holliday. Hear the voices of liberty speaking all across America. Doc Holliday provides thought-provoking interviews and commentary about the issues and actions that are afflicting this country and what we need to do to get America back on track. Get fired up. Get inspired. Get on board with Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics right now.
And here we go.
That's the sound of rock cracking once again. And like I said, it might have been like a glacier popping and breaking loose, because we got rock splitting politics right here for you, our listeners. You're listening to Doc Holliday. I'm the host, and you're listening to us right here on webtalkradio.net. That's webtalkradio.net, and we're glad to have each and every one of you. And we are talking about presidential elections. Go back and listen to last week's show as we talked about Bush jumping into the water, or should I just say Jeb? He doesn't seem like to put the name Bush on in. And we also talked about Donald Trump, played some clips from the Donald, and I think we had some interesting comments. So go back and listen to that archive show if you're not listening to it. But I told you last week, this is a special show, unlike any other host is doing, any other radio commentary. But you need to know what it takes and what it takes to make the United States president. We look at what the pundits say. We look like what the past presidents are. What has made the United States presidency? What is at stake? And why do you need to know the past to understand who you need to vote for coming up 2016? That's what we're dealing with in today's show. Unlike any other show, make sure you mark it down and tell your friends and neighbors. Tell them to come listen to Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics right here at the end of June, the first part of July. A great July 4th show. This is when people don't have anything to do. What's patriotic? Tell them to go to Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. Listen to this show about the shaping of the next United States president. And why is it an important show? Because you're going to hear things here you won't hear anywhere else. And we're going to get started. First, before we get with the show, I'm going to give you a little bit more about what's going on in the Democratic side. We have what some people are calling the Democratic Tea Party, because people are getting riled up about our socialist, our lone socialist that's, you know, self-proclaimed and proud to be a socialist, is running for president for the Democratic nomination against Hillary Clinton. And I just have to tell you that Bernie Sanders is picking up steam. Now, what does that mean? Bernie Sanders picking up steam, or socialist? Does that mean America is socialist? Well, we elected Barack Obama. I believe he's our first socialist president. Out and out, just far out socialist of all his policies. Bernie Sanders is be socialist on steroids, and that's what he wants to be. But what is it? This is Doc Holliday's take. The media knows Hillary Clinton's got it wrapped up. So what they're doing is giving time and energy to Bernie Sanders. They're trying to show that the Democrats have somebody more than just Hillary Clinton. And it's an important part of the media cheerleaders for the Democratic Party. The mainstream media has to show that the Democratic Party has got some diversity. And it's the Republicans who have the diversity. Look, we got an African-American running, neurosurgeon, and Ben Carson got Carly Fiorina, our female presidential candidate. We got a whole slew of diversity. We got two Hispanics with Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio. And so the diversity is on the Republican side. And it's, you just have to wonder what the Democrats are doing. But they're giving Bernie Sanders, the media is giving him a lot of popularity right now to give him a little time in the sun. And it actually pushes socialism. It does their job of pushing America further to the left. And they know that Hillary Clinton's got it locked up, but they got to show a little pizzazz, I guess. What's that word? I don't know, but it's something that the the cheerleaders of the mainstream media who are out-and-out socialists and liberals and progressives just having a little fun with Bernie Sanders. And O'Malley, you know, they don't care anything about O'Malley, and they know he has no spunk, and he's not going anywhere. And Jim Webb, bless his heart, wish he could get some steam. But, you know, it's Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton, the only two they care about, because it's the only thing that pushes the agenda toward the left. So I give you that take right there, and go back and listen to our shows, but really get set for the next few months. And we have got an important thing to do here. Number one, we got to inform you and tell you things you won't hear anywhere else. And did you hear anybody else talking about Jeb Bush and maybe making a possible quote deal, not a real out-and-out deal, but with John Kasich, Ohio. You know, that's your, who else is talking about Florida, Ohio, Jeb Bush, John Kasich? It looks great paper. Is that what the American people want? Is that what the Republicans want? You know, personally, I don't care for that team. I think we could do much better. We could do Cruz Rubio, have the first two Hispanics, Texas and Florida. You know, there's a lot of ways you can look at it. But I will say, we are going to follow this, put the magnifying glasses on places nobody else is talking about. So make sure you stay tuned to Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics during this presidential, all-important presidential season. Now, I said last week, today's show is help build a foundation of what you need to know. There's a famous novelist. He won the Nobel Prize for Literature back in the 50s. And he lived amongst the people I grew up around. And, of course, he's been dead 50 years now. But his name is William Faulkner. Many of you read a lot of Faulkner. Had to read it during your literature classes. I guess Common Core, all white men, old white men are kicked out. So I doubt people are reading much of Faulkner anymore, because he was considered an old white man, I guess. But William Faulkner summed up everything he wrote, because he write about a lot of history and how it played into the present. And he summed up two words, and famously, and he says, was, is. Two words, was, is. And that really sums up. The past is tied to the present. And you got to look at the American presidency. Where did it come from? How has it grown? And that's why you need to understand that to really get into the decision of who you're going to vote for and who's going to be the best person to be sitting in that White House, you know, in 2017. We got to get that person elected in 2016. So let's dig in here. Where did the United States presidency come from? Well, it comes from the United States Constitution, which came from the American Revolution. And right after the American Revolution, there was the Articles of Confederation. Everybody hold your hand up if you know who wrote the majority of the Articles of Confederation. Hold your hand up high. And it was pretty much single-handedly written person. You know who that is? And it's like a committee got together, but just like there was a committee that put together the Declaration of Independence. We know that Thomas Jefferson wrote it, but you had John Adams and Ben Franklin helping him out. And but there was a committee, and it was Samuel Adams, and some people call him the father of the American Revolution, the cousin of John Adams, but a very prolific person who put together the letters of correspondence and was really instrumental in pulling together the guts that it took to stand up to Great Britain and say, we need to declare our independence. But Samuel Adams was given the task of putting together some kind of government document. And this was during the Revolution. So the Articles of Confederation just ripped out central control. You would think, when you're having a fight, the greatest military power on earth, you'd have a lot of central control. But no, Samuel Adams, he feared, that's why they were fighting the king. He feared power going to central control, so he gutted central government. But what they found out is the Articles of Confederation were not working, and because they had no control. Each state could pretty much be its own country, and there was no working together. So the founders of our country came together and And they didn't even, they did it in secret, really, in the Independence Hall, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. But they put together what we would call the beginning of the United States Constitution. They battled it out. They shut, in the heat of the summer, they shut the shutters, the windows. They want people listening in. They wanted to have, be able to fully rough and tough and tumble and almost fist fights, and is about to all break apart when Benjamin Franklin said, look, you know, we need to be praying. He said, did we ever forget the divine power who we begged for and prayed for during the Revolution? And we know that we had divine guidance, so we started prayer. say that's why we have prayer in Congress now. But I don't want to diverge too much on that. But we did get the United States Constitution. And everybody hold your hand up if you know who presided over, the chaired, the Constitutional Convention. Hold your hand up high. Yes. See you across America. Benjamin Franklin was there. And he wasn't the chair. But he said he watched the chair that the chairman sat in. And on the back of that chair, and you can go look, there's a picture of a sun. And Benjamin Franklin said at the end of the convention, famously, that he didn't know if that sun was rising or setting. But by the time they come together and put the U.S. Constitution together, he said he was assured that the sun was rising on that chair. And that Constitution was put together for none other than the executive branch. You had the judicial, executive, and the legislative branch. But the executive was sitting there. All the people putting together a constitution were watching George Washington, and they made the office of the presidency of the United States the executive power. They gave much power because they patterned it after they wanted someone like George Washington. And they did go to Washington. They wanted Washington to lead the country as its first president. And the nation did so. So we, our hats go off to the foundation of the United States presidency. It came from our founders putting together an office that would be under the leadership of a strong, smart person who had considerable political skills, and that was George Washington. And they bequeathed that office, and they built it with him in mind. And George Washington famously got in there, and we owe so much to him for how he conducted himself with integrity and honor, knowing that he would be setting precedent for the office of the presidency of the United States. So that's where we began. And I wanted you to understand that the father, who they call the father of our country a lot of times, George Washington, he had the chance to take power and be like a king. And there people want him to be a king. But no, he relinquished power after the American Revolution. But he loved his country so much, he came back to be a part of the Constitutional Convention. And then he agreed to be the president. And he ran for re-election. And then he stepped down, set a precedent that 8 years is about long enough until Franklin Roosevelt challenged that. And Theodore challenged, he just didn't get elected again. But what we know and what you need to know, like I said, William Faulkner said, was, is, the past continues into the present. We keep building on what we know, what we've learned. The good, the bad, and the ugly makes up the American president. And we need someone who will fit that model, who was designed for, like George Washington. It takes a strong person, and it takes someone who respects the Constitution of the United States and works within the Constitution of the United States to make America work best. We do not need somebody who wants tyranny. We do not need someone who wants powers like a dictator. Saying all that, we're prepared. I'm going to take you on a journey. I'm going to tell you a story that's going to thread through American history and bring us to today. I'm going to tell you that story in just a moment. First, let me remind you, you're listening to Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. You're listening to us right here on webtalkradio.net. This is a special show about the presidency, why it's important, in the past has brought us to where we are today, and why your decision, the decision of the American voters 2016 to choose our next president in the party nominations and in the general election, is so important. Maybe we hear it all the time, but this could be the most important decision made in your lifetime about who will be our next president. So we're going to get the foundation. We're kicking it off with a special story starting in about 60 seconds. I want to remind you that I do have a new book coming out later this summer. We're working with Alveda King, Dr. Alveda King, and Alex McFarland. We're putting a book out that is telling the principles that America needs to succeed. So we'll be getting more information out about that. And I also want you to get our website, docholiday.org. We're getting it back up and going. And we took a little time off running for Congress, but we're getting that up there so we can share ideas, meet you. You can give us contact information. We'll send out information every once in a while. We're not going to flood you with emails. I promise you that. So these are the type of things that I'm glad you're listening to us. Tell your friends and neighbors about Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. Now get ready for a story, a journey through American history, American presidency, like you've never heard before. Here we go. Let's roll it.
In 1787, the Constitution we know today was written by delegates at the Philadelphia State House. They saw the need for a federal government, but with very specific and very well-defined responsibilities. They created a balanced central government, dividing powers among three main branches: the legislative, the judicial, and the executive. The head of the executive branch is the President of the United States. But even more than that, the president is chief executive, head of state, commander-in-chief, chief diplomat, and party leader.
Now, just as our commenter indicated, that's a lot of hats for the president to wear. Very important hats when you lead a country. And now it has grown to a country of way over 300 million people. So the president is representing all the citizens. The president's representing the military as the commander-in-chief, making all the, he's given extraordinary powers in time of war. And so because the colonists knew when they had a war, they gave General Washington complete authority. And they knew that a commander-in-chief needed that kind of authority and not letting a Congress run a war. So those are the things and hats that we talked about, that the American presidency started all this coming out of the Constitutional Convention. So let's talk about the presidents of the United States, a story you've never heard before, and I'm putting it together just for you, listeners of Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. Here we go. Well, we started with George Washington, and we've already mentioned him, what we owe him as our first United States president, and the honor that was given him by this whole office being created and shaped for his personality. Now, who was the second president? John Adams. John Adams was the vice president, and it looked like it was just he'd slip into being the president, but there was a battle and a fight, and John Adams represent what we would call the elitist. And you can go in the party, but throughout American history, look at those, the elitists who think they know what's best. So just don't listen to everybody. Everybody's not as smart as we are. We know these things. We know what's best. We're going to tell you what you need to do. And that's really the line of elitists goes through different parties, and that's who's in charge of America now. A group of elitists who think we know what's better for you, and they got this administration in power, and they are in power now. It doesn't matter what party you're in. John Adams began what we see the elitist. But what happened after John Adams? Thomas Jefferson came on board, and there was a knockout, drag-out fight for president when John Adams won, and then Thomas Jefferson served as vice president, and he couldn't stand John Adams or his elitist attitudes. And Thomas Jefferson wanted to represent the common person, the soul of the revolution. These are two guys that put together in the committee that wrote the Declaration of Independence, but they just could not stand each other politically. And we know by history that there was a lot of just very viciousness between them during their times of political power. But Thomas Jefferson came in and won the presidency. He was the third president. And what he did was he brought things back to the common man and said, the elitist, we don't need people telling us what to do. We can decide what we want to do ourselves, the common man. And that's the attitude Thomas Jefferson went into. He didn't even know if he had the power to make a deal for the Louisiana Purchase. But thank goodness he did have enough people nearby him and surrounded him and said, look, this deal does not come along much in history. Let's buy the Louisiana Purchase. Let's pay the money to Napoleon. And let's get this while the getting's good. And to his credit, Thomas Jefferson did not try to go to the Congress, did not try to say, should we do this or not? He did it. And that was the act of leadership. But you see how the power of the presidency can expand, even in the hands of someone who wants to make sure it's kept limited. Thomas Jefferson did not want to go outside the Constitution. He understood what it meant to stay within the confines, the walls, the barriers of the Constitution for the executive branch. And yet, we see him making the Louisiana Purchase, which was questionable, but he saw what America needed. And that's where one thing we lose focus on. I wanted you to understand this. Things will happen when the president of the United States is in power, and they have to have that leadership to know what's good for the country, not for themselves, not for their party, but what's good for the future of the United States of America. You have to have someone in power who believes in the country, believes in the Constitution, believes in the future. And that is what makes Thomas Jefferson such an important part of American history of the presidency. After Thomas Jefferson, we went into James Madison, and of course the War of 1812 popped in, and then there was a figure that came out of that war that later on became president. And so, in fact, let's just play a little song about him so you'll know who we're talking about as we move on in the important presidency.
In 1814, we took a little trip along with Colonel Jackson down the mighty Mississippi. We took a little bacon and we took a little beans, and we caught the bloody British in a town in New Orleans.
We fired our guns and the British kept a-coming. There wasn't as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to run it on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
Well, that was a song that commemorates the War of 1812 and Andrew Jackson in the Battle of New Orleans. So I just have to play that song. We're going to get to President Jackson in just a couple minutes. But let me just say, under James Madison, the country held together. We really, by all accounts, got beat by the British. And we about broke even after the war. The British really had in mind they were going to take New Orleans, even after the treaty was signed. If it wasn't for General Jackson and what he did down in New Orleans, and if, for all our friends, historians know the treaty had already been signed basically when the Battle of New Orleans was fought. But the British were going to go in and take over the port, and they were going to get a big bite out of the Louisiana Purchase is what they wanted. But it didn't happen, thanks to General Jackson and the Battle of New Orleans. So, but going back to James Madison, then we had James Monroe, the famous Monroe Doctrine. And that was a big doctrine to keep the European powers out of the Americas. Latin America, North America, South America, the Monroe Doctrine really spelled out, you know, stop meddling with the Americas. And that has been an important document in American history. We move on. And we had John Quincy Adams got elected as son of John Adams. Again, you go back, you see how the pendulum swings. What I want you to see in the power struggle is between John Adams and Thomas Jefferson. Now, John Quincy Adams, the elitist, and these are intellectuals, people who really feel like they know the government. And John Quincy Adams, his presidency is not known for anything huge or big, but what he did do, he represented the Patriots. He was one of the youngest diplomats. He worked with his dad. He worked under George Washington. He saw America being born. He saw its ups and downs, and he knew America, and he's part of the elite group that wanted the elitists to control America. But he couldn't stand the onslaught when he ran for re-election of General Jackson, his popularity, Andrew Jackson, Old Hickory, they called him. And he won. Old Hickory won. He had the popularity of the common person, much more so than even Thomas Jefferson, because he was coming from the western part of the United States, of Tennessee, the pioneer, the frontier. And these regions came together that had grown in popularity, grown in population, and now they elected Andrew Jackson, and he stood up for the common man against the national bank, against those elitists. He said, if a common person can't go in and get a deal from the bank, then the elitists shouldn't either. And he held to his guns and through a recession, but he stopped the National Bank of the United States, and he stood up for the common person. And that was a big, big period in standing up against the onslaught of powers that were concentrating even in the United States Constitution. We go on to presidents. I got to get to, you know who, Abraham Lincoln. And when Lincoln came in, it's just America was actually in a mess. Yes, they were in a mess. And was it going to tear apart? And when they say the election of Lincoln, the southern states couldn't stand it. Before he got inaugurated, they started to secede from the Union. Could they secede? And what would bring America together? Well, Abraham Lincoln took the office of the presidency of the United States, and he had been a congressman and then gotten beat and ran for Senate and gotten beat. But he knew the Constitution of the United States, and he did overstep his bounds during the war times. Even the Emancipation Proclamation, it didn't come out of the regular sessions of Congress. The Emancipation Proclamation came because we were in a war during the insurrection, and the Emancipation Proclamation was declared for the slaves that were not under Union control. So he was politically dancing because he didn't want Kentucky and Maryland and other slave states that were part of the Union to rebel and join the rebellion. So he just freed the slaves that were not under federal occupation. So a lot of the slaves were the federal Union troops that already had come in. Well, they weren't freed under the Emancipation Proclamation. He just declared the slaves that were outside the federal jurisdiction. And that is a fact that's not well known. And then, of course, later Lincoln pushed vividly done during that movie called Lincoln a couple of years ago that Spielberg put together. But it shows how the President Lincoln helped get the constitutional amendment pushed through to outlaw slavery in all of America. So Lincoln pushed the limits of the presidency so they could keep America as one, as the Union, as the United States of America. So unprecedented power used during the Civil War under President Lincoln with the war powers. So we keep going, and we can go through a lot of presidents, but where the next big step came in was Theodore Roosevelt. Roosevelt was stand up against the Vanderbilts, the Rockefellers, those who had enormous amounts of money to squeeze the little person. Well, Theodore Roosevelt, as a Republican, stood up to those interests, and it made some Republicans mad. Howard Taft came in, of course, we know Roosevelt got the Bull Moose Party and wanted to get back in the presidency. The Republicans didn't really want him at this point, and they nominated Taft. And what happened? Woodrow Wilson, the Democrat progressive, got in, and then he became a pushing power for progressive ideas that to this day we are still, I think, suffering under in many ways. But we got the income tax that was put in the Constitution, and you want a little side of that. You know, they went to the religious people who wanted prohibition and said, "Look, you help us get this, and the next thing we'll do is work on prohibition." And of course, we got stuck with the IRS, and they unstuck the prohibition that was struck in the deal. But we move on with power of American presidents, and you have to look from Theodore Roosevelt into the next, and Woodrow Wilson. The federal government exploded with the Depression, and Franklin D. Roosevelt, FDR, came in and really set up the socialist agenda, because they were people who wanted to throw out all of American government. They wanted to be like Russia, and look at the paradise of Russia. This was the 1930s, and the socialist and the communist were exploding, saying, look at the Depression. Look what capitalism has brought you. People are hungry. There's no jobs. We've got to have socialism. So FDR had tremendous pressure to keep America free, but he pushed a lot of progressive ideas. And in fact, his vice president, Henry Wallace, vice president during World War II, till Harry Truman came along, and Wallace is a devout communist and ran as a communist later in his life. So these are the things that FDR brought. And again, you see, when World War II started, unprecedented powers that FDR used in putting together the project that brought the atomic bomb, something that, you know, nobody knew about. He wouldn't even tell Congress about it. He couldn't tell them. He said, we had to have this. And so a lot of power began to become superpower during World War II under FDR. And we know, as the atomic bomb was used, and then the power of nuclear energy, and then we had Russia and the Cold War, and under Truman, under Eisenhower, under Kennedy, and the Cold War, as it grew, the amount of power of the American presidency grew, because you had to have that when you could have instant and worldwide suicide. So we saw that grow under Kennedy. And then, of course, Johnson went into Vietnam, and there was an undeclared war. 50,000 Americans died in this undeclared war, the Vietnam War. And we saw the presidency grow, and we saw it blossom as far as foreign policy and reaching out to Russia under detente and the Nixon administration. And then the powers of the presidency diminished when it was misused under the Nixon administration. And people wondered, where is America going? What is America? How do we get President Nixon, that a crook in the White House was he's being called? And so the War Powers Act came out of that era. It tried to weaken the president. But with Gerald Ford and Jimmy Carter, and Jimmy Carter, again, had a lot of power and tried to wield it in a worldwide way. And where did we, what did we get? Well, we got Russia getting more aggressive, went into Afghanistan, and Afghanistan war for the Russians. And you know, we had boycotts of the Olympics. And then we had Ronald Reagan, who came in and used the detente. He put together a new military and modernized the military, and it put Russia on notice. And then Russia and the Communist Party fell under the weight of that. So Ronald Reagan had tremendous success as he built up the military and putting pressure on the communist regime in Russia. And we go from, of course, President Reagan. We had Bush 1, then Clinton, Bush 2, and then now Barack Obama. That's what leaves us as the presidency of 2016, the election. We can see in this brief glimpse of how the American presidency has evolved, the power, and President Barack Obama has stretched, has gone overboard. When I talked about Thomas Jefferson wanting to stay within the constraints of the Constitution, and President Obama seems to, he seems to love to go beyond the walls of the Constitution, and like he did with immigration, when he declared, basically made a law, and the Congress has done nothing to stop him from doing that. So these are the type of things that we need to keep in mind. We need a president who understands his constitutional duties, protects America, and gets a robust economy going. The president can't do it all, but he can set in motion those things that are so important. So I wanted you to realize where we've come through. I wanted to tell you this story, American presidency and power, and what we need is someone who has a character, has integrity, and has a vision, and knows how to work within the confines of the Constitution to bring consensus of the American people, a consensus to go and lead with power, with the American people behind, and letting them know that they are secure in the leadership of this new president. That's what we need, and that's what you're going to get right here on Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics as we explore the different alternatives we have. I'll talk to you next week. Thank you for listening. See you next week.
Thanks for joining us today. And remember to listen again next week for another edition of Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. You can order Ed's new book, Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics, Tea Party versus the Status Quo, by clicking on the book cover right in front of you on the screen. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again next week.